Welcome to the My Magazine podcast, where we talk about everything from pop culture to trending topics. I'm your host, Amani Sams, and you guys are definitely in for a treat this episode. I had the pleasure of interviewing sports enthusiast, journalist, and four-time author Mr. Cecil Harris about the current state of the NFL versus Colin Kaepernick, the recent sports boycott due to the police shooting of Jacob Blake, and his book entitled Different Strokes, Serena, Venus, and the Unfinished Black Tennis Revolution. Thank you, Mr. Cecil Harris, for joining us today. Congratulations on your new book.
Well, thank you very much, Imani. I appreciate it.
Well, before we jump into Different Strokes, I want to discuss some of the other trending topics in sports, because I know that you are a sports fanatic. What are your thoughts about the current state of the black community and the NFL?
Well, it's interesting that a lot more social activism has come to the NFL, because I think it had to. There are so many things happening in society. Most recently, the killing of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin is on everyone's mind, because it's another example of an unarmed black person being killed by police. Mr. Blake was shot in the back 7 times,
right?
And we're being told that he is paralyzed, and the family is praying for a miracle that he will be able to recover and walk again. But when athletes hear about that, professional athletes, they're more likely now to use their platform. They are already public figures. The stars especially have a bigger platform, because people will listen to whatever they say.
Right.
And it's interesting that the Detroit Lions said, we're not practicing. They said that yesterday. They just did not practice because they were not emotionally prepared to just go out and practice football in light of what's going on still in America. I mean, people were marching all over the country, all over the world, after George Floyd was killed, and we saw how terrible that was.
Right.
And, you know, the Breonna Taylor case in Louisville, Kentucky, there's no video of what happened, but to read that she was shot 8 times and the police report said no injuries, I mean, this is outrageous.
Completely, you know, outrageous.
So, when, you know, these things happen, I'm glad to see NFL players, NBA players, athletes in general, WNBA players, speaking out about these outrages and using their platform to let people know that it's unacceptable, and it should not be just... There are people who say, oh, sports should be separate from the rest of society. No, sports is part of society, so it would be hypocritical of the athletes if they didn't react, if they didn't respond to these injustices. And for a long time, the NFL tried to keep a lid on it. You know, they made an example of Colin Kaepernick by basically taking his career away from him. But now, other NFL players have put out videos and made statements to force even the NFL commissioner to say Black Lives Matter.
Right, right. And I'm so glad that you mentioned Colin Kaepernick. You know, the NFL, they came out with a statement after George Floyd's death. And do you feel like it was hypocritical of them to come out then, you know, during the time of when everyone came together for the Black Lives Matter movement in light of police brutality? I mean, that's why they dismissed Colin in the first place, because of him protesting these injustices. So do you feel like that was hypocritical?
It was hypocritical, certainly, of the NFL to put out that initial statement saying we support the players' right to protest, because they didn't support the players' right to protest. You're right. They took Colin Kaepernick's career away and threatened to take other athletes' careers away if they were to kneel during the national anthem. So it was only after other NFL players like Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, the Super Bowl MVP, and several others put out their own video through the NFL Players Association that was strong and powerful. I mean, I remember Patrick Mahomes in the video saying, I am Breonna Taylor, and other athletes, I am George Floyd, I am Ahmaud Arbery, mentioning the names of unarmed black people who were killed just recently. They didn't even go back to Trayvon Martin. They were just talking in the year 2020, and there have been so many. And it was in response to that that the NFL put out a video with Roger Goodell in his basement talking about Black Lives Matter. But You notice, Amani, Roger Goodell still has not apologized to Colin Kaepernick by name.
He has not. And, I mean, I think that it's outrageous at this point.
Yeah. I mean, they're still hypocritical, the NFL. They want to claim that they are on the side of the players. And, yes, it is a step forward for the NFL to say, we will not stop players from kneeling in protest. They're on record saying that. And Roger Goodell gave an interview the other day saying that we should have listened to Colin Kaepernick. They knew what Colin Kaepernick was saying. They dismissed it. And, you know, a lot of the NFL owners are right-wing politically, and a lot of them are Donald Trump contributors.
Right.
The owner of the New York Jets, Woody Johnson, is now the ambassador of the Great Britain because Trump gave him that as a thank you for all the money you donated to me. And when you look at Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft and these other NFL owners, just about all of them are Trump supporters. So the NFL did not want to get on the bad side of Trump and be subject to his, you know, tweet storms at 3 o'clock in the morning, the other nonsense he does. So they basically crushed Colin Kaepernick to avoid being criticized. So it's hypocritical of Roger Goodell, the commissioner in 2020, to say, oh, we should have listened to Kaepernick. We really didn't know what he was saying, but now we understand. They knew what he was saying in the 2016 season. They just weren't accepting of it, and they used him as an example to try to keep the rest of the players in line.
They did. And as a result of that example, a short while ago, his girlfriend, radio personality Nessa, she came out on Twitter, and she was just enraged. You know, they listed him as a retired player. And, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Do you feel like he'll ever be able to play again in the NFL?
Well, he should be able to play just based on mathematics, right? When I look at the fact that there are 32 teams in the NFL, every team carries 3 quarterbacks. That's 96 quarterbacks. There's no way there are 96 quarterbacks better than Colin Kaepernick. So if no team gives him at least a tryout, it will really expose the hypocrisy of the NFL. He should be allowed to work out for a team because, you know, he hasn't played a game since January of 2017. So it would be appropriate to give him a tryout, not just put him on the roster, but let him show what he can do. And I'm sure that the skills are still there. But as long as the NFL doesn't give him a chance to try out for a team, it exposes the hypocrisy. And it will continue to turn off many people who see the NFL as basically, you know, willing to take your money, but not willing to give opportunities to black people. And in Colin Kaepernick's case, a man who led his team to the Super Bowl several years ago, they've taken his career away, again, as an example. Hey, if the rest of you get out of line, we'll take your career away too. And the NFL can make a strong statement by making absolutely sure that Colin Kaepernick plays for a team this year if he wants to. Now, with COVID-19, he may decide, I don't think it's safe. A lot of players have opted out, you know.
Right.
So if Colin Kaepernick says, I don't want to do it this year, but at least give him a chance to say it. The NFL, no one has given him an invitation yet to try out for a team. That exposes the hypocrisy of the NFL.
It most certainly does. And, you know, with the addition of Jay-Z taking that role in the NFL, you know, do you feel like, you know, besides that, do you feel like the black community will ever repair its relationship with the NFL? Like, what do you think it would take for that to happen?
Well, I'll tell you, one step in the right direction was the hiring by the Washington football team of Jason Wright as the first black president of an NFL team. And it shouldn't have taken this long. The NFL's been around a long, long time. But there is finally a black man running an NFL franchise, Jason Wright in Washington. It's going to take more of that, more black coaches being hired, more black general managers. Because if you look at the coaches and general managers and the scouts in the NFL now, those are former players. And it's a longstanding problem that white former players get those jobs. Black former players in the league where 70% of the players are black don't get those jobs. It exposes the systemic racism of the NFL. You can give the NFL 10, 15, close to 20 years of your life, And then when you retire, they're not offering you a chance to coach. They're not offering you a chance to be a general manager or to be in the front office. They're not offering you a chance to run a franchise. But white players, retired players, still get that opportunity. And as long as the black community sees that and is conscious of that, there's going to be big problems. Hiring decisions have to be more fair. And the systemic racism that has prevented former black players from staying in the league and moving up, and even in positions of broadcasters. There aren't many black former players who are hired for broadcasting.
Right.
And, you know, you see white former players all the time go right from the playing field into the broadcast booth, and they can do that for another 20, 30 years and make money. But the black former players basically disappear from the game because no one is giving them the opportunity, including, you know, the NFL, the blood, sweat, and tears that those players gave to the league for 10 years or more. And then when they retire, it's goodbye. Not, oh, we have another position for you. We'd like to offer you this. It doesn't happen for black players.
Right. And that's certainly a sad case. I just hope that, you know, people continue to protest and speak out against these injustices, you know, to create further change and opportunities for the future generation of football players and all players in the sports leagues.
Oh, I agree. I mean, the protests are healthy. Unfortunately, the protests can be dangerous, not because of what the protesters are doing, but what the anti-protesters are doing. We found out that last night a 17-year-old white boy from Illinois traveled to Wisconsin to basically shoot protesters, and he's been arrested today and is alleged to have killed two protesters. So he went out of his way to travel across state lines to go to Kenosha, Wisconsin, where he has no business, but he went there as part of really a white supremacist anti-protest group to shoot at black people. So the right of protesters to legally assemble, a constitutional right, is threatened by people like this 17-year-old boy who's got so much racism in his heart that he felt the need to go to Wisconsin to shoot black people.
Oh my gosh, that is just a horrifying incident. I mean, I'm speechless. It's sad that, you know, racism is continuously taught, and mm-hmm. I just hope that this new generation of protesters and activists coming up can just really, you know, speak wisdom into the next generation and, you know, have this to stop.
I certainly hope so. But with the president we have in office now, when he looked at what happened in Charlottesville in 2017, racist protesters, neo-Nazis chanting racist and anti-Semitic things, and this president said, oh, there were very fine people on both sides. No, there weren't. You know.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, a change at the top in president and vice president, I think, would go a long way toward healing what is ill in America today. And I don't mean to make a political speech, but when I look at the Democratic ticket, especially the vice presidential candidate, Kamala Harris, who's a first-generation American, whose father came to America from Jamaica, whose mother came here from India in search of a better life, they found it for themselves and their two daughters, and she has risen from San Francisco district attorney to California attorney general to United States senator, and now she has a chance to become vice president. That will inspire young people and give them renewed faith in what is possible in America. But if you have the same old, you know, Donald Trump mentality, I don't see anything changing for the better.
Absolutely not. And I'm ecstatic to see Kamala Harris on the ticket. I think that she'll be an amazing asset to the White House. And everyone that's listening to this podcast most definitely needs to vote. That's how things change. So yeah, it starts with your vote. So please make sure everyone goes out this November and cast your vote. But let's move over into discussing your book.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. So your book is entitled Different Strokes, Serena, Venus, and the Unfinished Black Tennis Revolution. So this book definitely gave the Williams sisters the credit that they so most definitely deserve. What made you decide to write this book?
Well, I looked at what the Williams sisters have accomplished and realized that in many ways they're underrated. I wanted to give them the credit they deserve as the most successful sibling act in the history of sports. You literally cannot point to another group of brothers or another group of sisters in any sport who have accomplished more than Venus and Serena. Serena has 23 major titles, the most in the Open era since 1968. Venus has 7 major titles, so they combined for 30. They were a doubles team that won 3 Olympic gold medals, and they would have been favored to win the Olympic gold medal if there were the Olympics this year in Tokyo. They were put off until next year. So 30 major singles titles between them, 14 major doubles titles, on 3 Olympic gold medals, and they are not necessarily on the tip of everyone's tongue when people are talking about great athletes, especially Serena. Serena belongs in the same sentence with Muhammad Ali, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Wayne Gretzky, Usain Bolt, iconic athletes. And I wanted to document all that, and I chose to, I covered the 2018 U.S. Open for the New York Daily News, and it was interesting that Venus and Serena played each other in the third round. So I took that as a launching point to talk about where they are now and what they've done for the sport, because if you were to take away Serena and Venus, American tennis would be almost nowhere. Now, they have carried the banner for American tennis for decades and inspired not one but 2 generations of players, especially female players, to follow in their footsteps. So they're both iconic, and especially Serena. Serena's the greatest female tennis player of all time.
Absolutely.
And Venus is one of the best.
Absolutely. I love that you started off the book with the 2018 U.S. Open. I mean, this book is definitely a page-turner.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Also, in the book, you know, you discuss the French Open debacle where the catsuit incident, I think.
Yeah.
I think everyone can remember that incident and how enraged we were, especially you know, we know her medical background and how she was battling blood clots and how the cat suit would have helped her. But what are your personal thoughts about this matter?
I found it offensive that the French Tennis Federation passed a new rule right after the tournament that no one can wear a cat suit like that again. And they gave Serena a hard time, even though, as you pointed out, Serena was dealing with blood clots, and that cat suit basically was able to prevent clotting and improve her blood circulation while she played. But I wonder if when Serena said this cat suit is also sort of a tribute to the movie Black Panther, and it, you know, makes me feel like a superheroine, I wonder if that offended these older white males in the French Tennis Federation who don't want to see that sort of thing catch on, where more players may start wearing cat suits. Now, again, it wouldn't bother me, but maybe it bothered them just to see Serena wearing a tennis outfit that made her feel empowered. It wasn't just tennis clothing. It was empowerment.
Exactly.
You know, they really objected to something that they had no business objecting to. And in researching the book, I realized that there are 2 other sports traditions in France, or 2 other traditions in France, where men are basically legislating what women can or can't wear. I mean, at the Cannes Film Festival every year, they basically tell women, if you're walking on the red carpet, you have to wear heels. What kind of rule is that?
Exactly.
You know, and also the Tour de France, the most famous bicycle race in the world. After a man wins his stage in the Tour de France, he goes up on the podium and he accepts flowers from 2 women who are basically there as ornaments. You know, they're not athletes. They're up there because they're attractive women. And, you know, that's the French mentality toward women. We should determine what the women wear if they're going to be on a podium. The tennis player, in this case Serena Williams, should not be able to determine that she wants to wear something that makes her feel empowered, that makes her feel strong and beautiful and athletic.
Right, and it seems like the French are definitely behind on women's rights and not seeing women as being objects. So, I mean, that's ridiculous. Yeah.
You know, it was crazy. And it's interesting, too, that right after the French Tennis Federation said, okay, in future French Opens, we are banning the catsuit, the Women's Tennis Association said, we have no problem with the catsuit, you're allowed to wear it. So basically, at every other tournament, except, let's say, the French Open, and Wimbledon also banned it, as I pointed out in the book, you know, another different group of older males who want to dictate what women wear instead of accepting what female athletes want to wear. But at least in every other tournament in women's tennis, if Serena wanted to wear a catsuit, if any player wanted to wear a catsuit, she could.
Exactly. Exactly. So who do you feel, besides the Williams sisters, that it has been overlooked in the sport of tennis?
Well, I would say the most overlooked champion of all time was the first black major tennis champion, Althea Gibson. Althea Gibson played in the 1950s when tennis was an amateur sport, so she didn't make any money, but she was the trailblazer in tennis. If you ask most people to name the first black tennis champion, most of them will name Arthur Ashe, because he came in the 1960s when more households had television sets and tennis became really a television sport. You could watch the U.S. Open or Wimbledon on TV. When Althea dominated in the 1950s, tennis was not a television sport. It was an amateur sport, but she won Wimbledon back-to-back, 1957, 1958. She won the U.S. Nationals back-to-back in 57 and 58. She won the French Open in 1956. She was the number one player in the world. Unfortunately for Althea, she didn't make any money, and she was subjected to more racism than any other tennis player has ever seen. For example, she was allowed to play in the U.S. Nationals singles event from 1950 until the end of her career in 1958, but she was not allowed to play in the doubles event until 1957 because, basically, she wasn't invited. She's an African-American who was not invited to play in her country's doubles championship. And that cost her a chance to win 14 additional major titles because she couldn't compete in women's doubles or mixed doubles. And it is just flat-out racist to do that to a great athlete from your own country. But, of course, they didn't see a black woman the same way they saw a white American woman at that time. And that's a major part of the reason why most people I hope people will buy the book to read about Althea Gibson in addition to the Williams sisters and everyone else. And most people who follow sports have never heard of the name Althea Gibson because she was so discriminated against. As I pointed out, she was prevented from playing in many of the biggest tournaments, even in America.
Oh, my God. That's just a disgrace to me.
Yeah.
So in addition to Althea, I found out that there hasn't been a black umpire in tennis since 1993. And that has definitely been a long time. That was the year I was born. So that was 27 years ago. I mean, that's outrageous. What do you think it'll take for more people of color to make it into tennis and into those roles as umpires and so on?
But here's the thing, Amani. There are qualified black tennis umpires, but the systemic racism of the U.S. Tennis Association has kept those black umpires from having an opportunity.
Wow.
Yeah, 1993, a black woman named Sandy French from California was the umpire for the U.S. Open women's final, and she did a fine job. You know, they have an old saying in sports, if you don't notice the referee or the umpire, then they've done a good job. And she did her job well. But that was the last time any African-American was allowed to officiate a U.S. Open final. When she came back to the U.S. Open in 1994, they demoted her. They took her from the umpire sitting in the high chair to being one of the umpires calling the lines. And when she asked, why have I been demoted? I worked the final last year. They told her, you didn't deserve to work that final last year. Instead of praising her and congratulating her.
Right.
They demoted her and they put her down. And that's why she and another black umpire sued the U.S. Tennis Association for racial discrimination. It was settled out of court. Both umpires signed non-disclosure agreements, so they're not allowed to talk publicly about what they signed for. But I interviewed both of them for a previous book, and I know the issues involved. It's basically the U.S. Tennis Association being as hypocritical as the NFL. They will say they're in favor of equal opportunity. They will say they're against racism and discrimination, but they actually practice discrimination. They let black umpires get only so far before they basically kneecap them, and they don't allow them to officiate the biggest matches. It's been going on now for 27 years. It's disgraceful.
Definitely disgraceful. And I'm so glad that you wrote this book and you're addressing these topics to inform us. Where can the listeners find this book?
Well, this book is available at any bookstore with an online presence. There's an independent bookstore that you like, and they have a website. You can order the book through them. The major bookstore chains, Amazon.com, also carries it. And Books A Million, Barnes & Noble. But I like to also refer people to a website called bookshop.org, because it's a consortium of independent booksellers. And during this COVID-19 pandemic, a lot of small businesses are suffering. And I made a reference to this president earlier. You know, small business owners of color are not getting the bailout money that other so-called small businesses have been getting. You know, they tend to take care of their friends first. But if you're a black bookstore owner during this pandemic, maybe you got some money. You probably didn't get any. So going to bookshop.org at least gives independent booksellers a chance to make money if you order Different Strokes through them. But really, even if you want to go on Amazon.com and order Different Strokes, you can do that too.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
In addition to Different Strokes, you also have other novels available. You have a book about black hockey and the sport of baseball. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, my first book was Breaking the Ice. I decided to write about blacks in hockey because 2 decades ago, I was one of the few black hockey beat writers. I covered the Carolina Hurricanes of the National Hockey League in Raleigh, and I enjoyed that experience, and I would meet the black players in the league, and we would talk about our experiences, and I realized no one had ever written a book about the history of blacks in hockey, which goes back to the early 1900s in Canada. There was a league called the Colored Hockey League. That was the name of it.
Oh, my gosh.
It's 1917. So blacks have been playing hockey for a long time, and I wrote that book just to let people know that it's really not unusual if a black boy or girl wants to play hockey. That there may not be the ice in the neighborhood, there may not be the skating rinks, and it's an expensive sport, but for black boys and black girls to want to play hockey really isn't that unusual. And I bring the same message forth in my tennis books. People tend to think, oh, why does this black girl want to play tennis? Why does this black boy want to play tennis? Well, the American Tennis Association was started by black people in 1917 in Baltimore. And the historically black colleges like Howard University, Morehouse, Spelman, Central State, on and on, they've had tennis for a long time. When Booker T. Washington founded Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, he had a tennis court built on the university because he liked to play tennis. So we've been involved in tennis for a long time, and I just want people to know that it's, for us, it's not just about basketball, boxing, football. Black people have made their marks and become extremely successful, and they've become inspirational figures in so many sports, even sports that don't come immediately to mind, like hockey or tennis.
Right, and they most definitely have. You guys, make sure to pick up this book. It's a page-turner. I love it. I give it 5 stars.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Mr. Harris, can you also share your social media handles with the listeners?
Okay, yes. On Facebook, I'm Author Cecil Harris. On Twitter, I'm at Cecil H. author. I'm not on Instagram yet. I probably should be, but that's more picture-driven, but eventually I'll be on there. But I'm on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn as Cecil Harris.
That is awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. You do a great job, and I enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode. For more news and information like this, make sure to check out amimagazine.com. See you next week.